Thank you. This is supposed to be sort of tutorial or something, so feel free to ask questions as we go along. I've gotten a tendency to use slightly different notations than other people, so I've put them over here. One thing, I hate writing kappas. Kappa's not a fun letter to write. But just for you, okay. So that first equation which looks funny, the kappa of SLE, I'm going to use A, which is equal to 2 over kappa. That little thing in the parentheses is for those who went to the second talk yesterday. It's equal to the kappa bar of yesterday's talk over 2. And then I'll do the scaling exponent B, which will appear inverse. Wait, kappa bar. Oh, did I get the.
Kappa bar was divided by 4.
Was it?
No, it's 1 over 2 kappa bar.
Okay.
I don't think that we should.
Double, okay, that's just, okay. Well, that's probably good. That's right, because you had, okay, which one's kappa bar and which one's 1 over kappa bar? That's why I was confused, because you had it arranged. Yeah, with this notation, it's arranged so the duals multiply to 1. So I don't know which one was which.
Okay.
And I'm going to use lambda, but that C there is central charge. So lambda is equal to that, but it's also equal to minus central charge over 2. Well, I'll get to them as I was going. I'm assuming people here have no SLE. That's my one prerequisite. My understanding, I can assume people know what chordal SLE is. Let me just draw the picture here, get some notation. Call this curve gamma. So that's gamma of t. And gamma of t is mapped to u sub t. And the way that it's traditionally written is the following way. The equation. Take the time derivative of gt of z. And what Schramm showed was that if we're going to assume some sort of conformal invariance of this process and some scale invariance, then u sub t must be a Brownian motion. So ut is equal to square root some constant, which was kappa, times wt, where wt is a standard Brownian motion. Now, there's a certain arbitrariness that's in this definition, and the arbitrariness was deciding to make this constant 2 rather than anything else. That's just an arbitrary. And by making it 2, you end up having this square root of kappa down here, and it just makes life difficult. I found it easier to instead change time so that ut is a standard Brownian motion. And that just changes this parameter. So I will change things slightly. So I'm going to use the following equation. Where in this case, A is 2 over kappa. So instead of growing at I haven't told you what ut is yet. I'll tell you what ut is in a second. Where ut is just a standard Brownian motion, but I want to do one other thing. I want to make it minus a Brownian motion. So I'm going to call it minus bt, where bt is a standard Brownian motion. So ut is also a standard Brownian motion.
Bt is the same as wt?
Yes. Yeah. The only, except that I didn't put a minus sign here, and I just put a minus sign there just for convenience, and I'll show it as, well, I'll show in a second. This is just a convenience per second. So here, at infinity, as z goes to infinity, gt of z looks like z plus at over z plus dot, dot, dot. So I've changed the constant, the rate at which it's growing at infinity. You see? So this is the same process, just at a different speed. Or the other way of writing this, which is what happens a lot, is if we fix a z in the upper half plane, or actually any even the closed upper half plane minus zero, and I let capital ZT, which depends on z, be gt of z minus ut, then I can write this equation as the stochastic differential equation, dzt equals a over zt plus dt plus dvt. That's the reason to do my plus signs this way, plus and minus signs this way. And this is valid. All this is valid up to time, up to the time t, which depends on z, which is the first time that z sub t is equal to zero. Might be infinite, might be finite. Okay, so I don't know what things have been said before. Okay, so if we stick in ut equals minus bt or Brownian motion, then we do get a curve gamma over there. That's a non-trivial result due to Rhoda and Schramm. It may not be a simple curve, but it's not too difficult to see, assuming it's a curve, what the phases are. So we have the phases called the phases of SLE. If A is bigger than or equal to a half, i.e. kappa less than or equal to 4, gamma is a simple curve. If A is between 1/2 and 1/4, I kappa between 4 and 8, gamma has self-intersections, but not self-crossings, but not space plane filling, space filling. And if A is less than or equal to 1/4, i.e. kappa bigger than or equal to 8, gamma is actually space filling. I don't want to go through the proof of this, but I want to say is that given that you have gamma, this is actually not too difficult, fairly straightforward analysis of this equation. Let me show where that comes. Let's start with this, which is sort of the easier one. Let me just draw a little picture here. Well, I have some colors. Suppose I was going to hit my path. Suppose I were going to hit my path. Well, let me call this gamma t here. Let me remove that part of the path. And then it looks like That picture more or less looks like that. Which means that at this point, there's a point on the real line. So, not simple curves basically correspond to curves that hit the real line. So, conformally equivalent, they're equivalent. So, asking whether or not you can hit that path corresponds to, does this curve come back? Is there a chance that it hits the real line? Now, to ask whether or not it hits the real line, to ask whether or not it hits the real line, if I take some point x there, when this hits the real line, z sub x equals 0. And that, if that's time t, if this has come and hit beyond x, then zt of x is equal to 0. So the question comes down to, do the solutions of this hit 0 in finite time or not? And that's a standard thing from stochastic differential equations. I'm not going to do this particular one today. That's a standard fact about Bessel processes. Zt is not equal to 0 for all t bigger than 0. This is starting at a real point if and only if a is bigger than or equal to a half. That's if a is bigger than or equal to a half, you get enough push away from the origin to prevent you from going there. The other one's a little trickier, and let me just tell you the little problem you have to do, if you wanted to show this. So suppose I'm not going to be space filling. Suppose I'm not going to be space filling, but I'm going to hit the real line. But if you think about it, then there are a couple of points there that I don't hit there. I hit beyond here. These two points are swallowed at the same time. So, not space filling, but kappa bigger than 4 is the same as saying that tx equals tx prime for some x not equal to x prime. It means that the time that they get swallowed is the same for two different points. So now you have two equations, and I should probably write them out a little more explicitly here. I've written them out explicitly because it's important that the same Brownian motion is in both of these places. So these are two very coupled stochastic differential equations. If x is less than x prime, bigger than 0, like in this picture, this one is always to the left of this guy, except maybe when they get to 0. And the question is, can they get to 0 at the same time? And the answer is, if 1/4 is less than a is less than 1/2, this is possible. And it's an analysis of this one-dimensional stochastic differential equation. And if a is less than or equal to 1/4, it's impossible. So in this case, x less than x prime implies tx is less than tx prime. Okay, I don't want to do that one. I'm going to do some other ones in more detail. Okay, now I want to draw a picture, and this picture's very fundamental, so maybe I'll spend a little time drawing it in terms of the notations. So I'm going to look at chordal S now. So I'm going to look at the upper half plane. I'm going to make a perturbation of the upper half plane. So I'm going to remove part of it. So I have, so I'll start with H, the upper half plane, and D. And this red here is H minus D. That's the part being removed. I'm going to assume that D is simply connected. The part being removed is bounded, and it's also bounded away from zero. And now I'm also going to take an SLE starting at zero, chordal SLE starting at zero. Say up to some time, I think gamma t. And now I'm going to look at the two different things. I can first remove the curve, or I could remove the perturbation. So in this direction, I'm going to let PD be the map that removes the red. Actually, it's not going to be so important for us, well, right now, exactly where that goes, but two assumptions. I will assume that PD of infinity is infinity, and PD prime of infinity is 1. So that normalization will be made. The actual real translation is not so important at this moment. I can also use the Lerner equation to get rid of GT. And then this point here is U sub T. And now this is a domain I'll call D sub T, which is GT of D. And now I can remove this guy here by something which I'll call phi D sub T. So I'll probably just shorthand it to D sub T. It's the guy that removes this with that condition up there, so that gets. And it may seem like I may not have gotten the translation, but I have to set the translation so that this picture can use. Let me call this GT star. Over here, I could use the Lerner, I could just get the equation that the map that removes this slit down to here. And let me just, for some notation, I'm going to use this for a little bit. I'm just going to use capital F for the inverse maps here. Okay, so. Now a lot of what I want to do today is analyze what's happening in this picture. So one of the questions is, what is is SLE corridor is SLE in B. The Lorimer equation gives SLE in H. Now, Schramm's original paper spent very little time on this. Why did it spend very little time on this? Because one of the assumptions that he made in SLE was it should be conformally invariant. If it's conformally invariant, then the image of SLE over here by the conformal map F sub D has to be SLE over here. So that's how he defined it. So definition was conformal image of SLE in H. Under this case, it would be FD. It would be as if I started with an SLE over here.
SLE in H minus D, I guess.
Oh, absolutely. No.
D is the big one.
I'm calling D the domain. The perturbation is H minus D. I'm calling D the domain.
Oh, D is the outside.
Yeah. Just choice of notation. Yeah. So that's the original definition. But now I want to give. I actually want to give about three different more definitions.
One question. And I know it's really not important, but are you assuming a parameterization can occur because you're writing the T?
It's okay. It's that's okay. I mean, that is important. And actually, okay. Okay, first thing is that this definition is all modulo parameterization. So you don't want to try to define something that depends on the parameterization.
Because when you're writing explicitly with T, I guess you're...
When we actually start writing some equations, we'll have to put some parameterizations on. And you've already made a reasonable point that made... if we parameterize by capacity, the time t here, this capacity is not the same as this capacity. It is not the same. So in this comment here, what I really should have done was I parameterize here by capacity, then take the conformal image, and I get something which is not parameterized by capacity. In fact, we're going to write down the equation for this. In fact, that's one of the things I do want to do today. Is to write down. So let's in fact let's do this. So let's start by let's assume UT star is a standard Brownian motion. So we're going to assume we have SLE over here and GT star. This satisfies the Lorimer equation. And now I've given the parameterization. I've given a particular parameterization. So we're assuming. Suppose we started with SLE over in this over here. You can just ignore the red for a minute. Now we have the map F sub D, which maps this here. And now we're going to see what happens for well then. Then GT satisfies, let me write down the equation. So it's basically the same equation. Except I'm not quite finished. Because of this parameterization change, when I do an infinitesimal change in capacity here, I have to know what the infinitesimal change in capacity is there. To figure out what that is, it's easier to look down here because this capacity will be the same as that capacity. This capacity will be the same as that capacity. Relating this capacity to that capacity has to do with the derivative of the map here. In fact, it's the derivative squared. So it's actually Ft prime of U2. This is a completely deterministic fact. So right now, all I've done is I've started with some deterministic curve, solved this, and then define GT bit. So that's. Now what I want to do is want to write say, well, what does this process U sub t satisfy? And now we have to do some stochastic calculus, Amito's formula. And now it's probably easier when doing Ito's formula to realize that this is a function of two variables, t and ut star.
Is there a d missing on the right hand?
There's a d missing. I'm sorry. Thank you. F is actually a random function because it depends on the Brownian motion up to time t. So it's a random function, but it's adapted. So it depends on the Brownian motion up to time t, but not the future. If it turns out to be continuously differentiable in t, then I can use the standard Ito's formula. I'm going to use the standard Ito's formula, but there's a subtle, important subtlety here. I've got to use the fact that this actually has a derivative in t. But Ito's formula would say that this is equal to, I take the time derivative, and just okay. This notation can get a little confusing. By this I mean the time derivative of that function where x is put in ut star. I'm not trying to differentiate the t.
Partial derivative.
Partial, yeah, okay. Okay, my other thing is, I will use dots for dt a lot, and I will use primes and double primes for dx's or dt's, or dz, yeah, dx's or dz's. So I'm going to use that for spatial derivatives, and that for just so I don't, because a big open question in mathematics is to find a good notation for partial derivatives. And I'm going to avoid them as much as possible. So that's the time derivative. The partial with respect to t of that. Okay, well, let me not get the circle. Plus I'm going to use mathematician's notation. One of the reasons why probabilists and physicists don't get along very well is brackets. Mathematicians, actually the T often comes out here, use this for the quadratic variation. However, in this case, UT star is just a standard Brownian motion. So in this case, it's just a standard Brownian motion, and it's just DT. Now, one of the subtleties here is that we have to look at this thing. What we have to do is compute this. And in order for this computation to make sense, what we're doing is we're taking the change of this function over time t, as you add a particular point x. X is not, so what we're trying to do is just differentiate this with respect to t. And how do we change f? We change f by putting some perturbation of the curve. But the answer better be independent of the perturbation of the curve. So this doesn't depend on the perturbation of the curve, how you perturb the curve, except that you give it the right parameterization capacity. Now, in this particular case, it's actually not a difficult thing to compute. I won't go through it, but if I had this picture, f sub t is actually gt circle fd circle gt star inverse. And at least if I'm not at ut star, I can just use the chain rule. So what I can do is I can use the chain rule for z near ut star. I won't write it out. It's a simple calculation. And then hope that the limit exists as z goes to ut star. And it does. So I'm just going to tell you what the answer is. This turns out to be minus 3a over 2 times the second derivative, second spatial derivative of f. Oh, ut star is right. Thank you. I'll get rid of the star soon. In other words, ut satisfies, and I got to shorthand the notation, so I'm going to plug in that 1 half minus 3a over 2 ft prime, double prime of ut star dt So now what I've done is I've said what I could do is I can solve the Lerner equation over here, but instead of just taking a Brownian motion, I take a thing, I let u sub t satisfy a certain stochastic differential equation, and this depends on the path up to that point. But if I just take the curve and let ut satisfy this, then that will be SLE in the smaller domain. But now what I want to do is write this in a slightly nicer form. Well, we now want to focus on the left-hand side. We've written this like this, but we've written it with a funny parameterization. We've written it a funny parameterization because it's always growing like that. Because what we did is we had it so that the capacity was growing linearly on this side. It doesn't grow linearly on that side. Let's change variables so the capacity grows linearly on this side. So by changing parameterization, I'm just going to use, okay, this is slightly sloppy notation. This is going to be ut with a different parameterization. Actually, 1 half minus 3a over 2 is minus b. Okay, this is slightly sloppy notation. What I've done is change time. So this is a standard Brownian motion, but it's not exactly this one. It's really a different one. It's a stochastic integral of this one. But I'm just going to call it b sub t. There is a square. Sorry. There definitely should be a square there. But finally, what I want to do is, instead of using f sub t, I want to write it in terms of the inverse function p sub t. So I'm exercising inverse functions. And this time there's no square. And so what I've derived here is what I consider definition 2 of Brownian motion in of SLE in the smaller domain. SLE in the smaller domain D is the solution to the Lorentz equation where u sub t satisfies this equation, which we can also write it like this if properly interpreted, the primes. All the primes are x derivatives, and just, yeah, okay. Right. Yeah?
So this is now parameterized so the capacity grows linearly.
Right, and this grows linearly on this side.
And on that side, when you talk about the capacity, the red region plays no region.
Right, so the red, you do not see the red region when doing, yeah, right. That's a good point. This is with respect to the half-plane capacity, not a...
It always means half-plane.
Capacity always means half-plane capacity.
Excuse me, I'm a physicist. Can you explain better the concept of capacity? I mean, I know there's the coefficient which appears in the conformal mapping.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay.
But I don't see how you use the concept here.
Well, it's okay. There are a number of definitions of this. By the way, just a terminology. We call this thing half-plane capacity. And in various papers, it'll be written either two different ways. Either CAP, which can be confusing because there's another natural capacity there. In my book, I couldn't decide. I made a macro early on of h-cap, and by the time I finished the book, I still couldn't decide, so h-cap stayed. So in my book, I used h-cap for this, but regardless, it's a measure of the size of the set. Let's suppose A is a subset of H. There are a number of ways of defining this. If H minus A is simply connected, and G from H minus A to H is the conformal transformation, with G of Z minus Z going to 0 as Z goes to infinity, that uniquely defines the transformation, then the expansion at infinity is this. So it's one way of defining it, if H minus A is simply connected, is just that coefficient. There are other definitions. And some of the other definitions have the advantage that H minus A doesn't have to be simply connected. Let me just give one of them, which is a probabilistic definition. But sorry, I'm a probabilist. So there's A. Let's start a Brownian motion at the point IY. So there's a Brownian motion. And I'll let the Brownian motion run until it hits the real line or hits A. So now BT is a complex Brownian motion. Tau is the minimum, the infimum of all time, such that BT is in the real line or A. Let's take the expected value of the imaginary part of B tau, given we start at the point IY. I'll take the limit of this as y goes to infinity. But that actually goes to 0, so I have to put in a y. One of the most important facts about this h-cap, which differs from cap, is that it has a sort of square root scaling or square scaling. If I take a set A and dilated by a factor R, it affects the h-cap by an R squared. So that's an important scaling rule.
As it was a hypothesis to ask a question.
Go ahead.
You could also say that if you put an electric charge on that object such that the real axis is grounded, then it's the electric dipole moment. So if you put an electric charge on the object and an opposite charge on its image in the real axis, so the thing has an electric dipole moment, and with this h-cap is the electric dipole moment.
I worry about these definitions.
It's not a definition.
Ideas. Well, which one's cap and which one's h-cap?
That's h-cap.
That's h-cap. Okay, that's what's
it's
okay.
Dipole moment.
Okay, that was.
The electric capacity.
Dipole moment opposed to electric capacity. Thank you.
Okay.
It's good to have a translator in the audience. Another important fact is that as I grow the curve, this number increases continuously, and strictly increases continuously, so you can always reparameterize a curve so that this grows linearly. Okay. So this is definition two of SLE in a smaller domain, which is take SLE, take a solution of the Lerbner equation where the u sub t, which is often called the driving function, where the driving function u sub t satisfies this stochastic differential equation.
It's still phi t depends on all the paths.
Yes. Right. So okay, you've gone for a while. You want to know what your drift is here. Where that red guy is makes a difference. So at all times, yeah, you can. If you've gotten close to the red guy, you're pushed a lot away from it. If it's far away, you're almost doing free. Right. Well, it certainly is dependent.
When did it start being called capacity? What's the etymology of it?
Schramm called it that. From a probabilistic perspective, capacity there is certain capacity. Capacity can be related to Brownian motion. This is actually related to the Brownian excursion. So if you take a Brownian motion that's sort of conditioned to go to infinity, you can actually write, you can actually compare this to, you can actually write some formulas that are capacity-like. As far as, but Schramm was using it, I think. I mean, it is somewhat it's the natural analog in this situation, and therefore it's natural to call it capacity, but it isn't exactly the same quantity, so it can be confusing. So half-plane capacity is sort of, what does half-plane capacity mean? It means this, because we've defined it to mean that. Okay, I want to get to, okay, all right. There's another quantity that I want to get to, okay. Okay, wait, so one other comment. All of this picture over here is valid only up to the time, let me call it sigma. The first time that gamma t hits h minus d. If gamma hits h, happens to hit here, then my picture is invalid. If you were just told, look at the Lerner equation satisfying this stochastic differential equation, you probably couldn't answer the question, does it hit it or not? But we actually do know whether there's a chance of hitting or not in finite time, because we know definition one, we happen to know that if we do this, this actually is SLE in the smaller domain. For kappa less than or equal to 4, we will not hit the red part. For kappa between 4 and 8, there's a positive probability we'll hit the red part. For kappa equals greater than or equal to 8, we'll definitely hit the red part. It'll be very hard just looking at that equation to determine that. Okay, but it's probably important that all of our writing, these equations are valid for t less than sigma. So the next thing I want to look at is the following quantity. So we still have that picture there. But here we're going to let ut be a Brownian motion. So forget this for a minute.
We're just going to do SLE.
So this means, isn't it Brownian?
Yes.
Yes, okay.
Right, right, yes.
No.
B is a, choose whatever kappa you wish. Choose the appropriate B to go along with it.
You want to drop this term?
Well, I haven't written the equation. I haven't said anything about this yet. You're jumping ahead there. I can write that down for any value. I can write kt is equal to that. I haven't said anything about it yet.
No, by saying that u of t is Brownian motion, you know what u of t is.
I'm saying forget that for the time being. We're starting afresh. So you're starting afresh. Suppose u sub t is a Brownian motion up here. That's all that I'm doing here. And there happens to be some sort of, this set is here. So we're assuming now that u sub t is a Brownian motion. As long as I haven't hit here, I can, this picture is perfectly valid, and I can talk about the map v sub t. So that's all that I'm doing. So there's the map v sub t, and I look at this quantity. And what I want to do is Itô's formula on this quantity. Well, I'm not going to write down the details. But basically, it's the same as we did before. We will need the following quantity. Before we had the time derivative of f x, we would need the time derivative of the spatial derivative. But this can be done in a similar way by the chain rule. Maybe I'll write that since it's so. So to do Ito's formula, you need this quantity, which just turns out to be a over 4 phi t double prime over phi t prime minus 2a over 3 phi t triple prime, all evaluated u sub t, and just not writing that down. Now I'm going to write what d case of t is. I've actually, there are some terms that drop out because we've chosen the right AB correspondence. So here, S is a Schwarzian derivative. Lambda I've written there is this lambda over here, which is minus c over 2. Actually, before I continue, your question reminded me there was something I was supposed to say that I hadn't said about cap equals 6. So I'm sorry. I'm going to back up a little bit while this is still on the board. An important point was made. So we have this equation here. When is this equation just the usual Brownian motion? This is a usual Brownian motion when b is equal to 0, which is the same as a is equal to 1/3. Or cap equals 6. So over here, so this says that if I start the Brownian motion over here, take the conformal image of it and see what happens, then for cap equals 6 and only cap equals 6, this thing moves as if it cannot see that red guy. So it moves. Now, when it hits the red guy, the game's over. So it can't see cap equals 6, it can't see the red guy until it actually bumps into it. Then. So for cap equals 6, we just get normal Brownian motion. This is the locality property.
So the locality property is this equation?
The locality property is the fact that for the locality property is the following property about SLE6. If I take a conformal image of SLE6, it just looks like a normal SLE in this picture until it hits the boundary. So locality means that it's moving locally as if it's SLE. It just doesn't. By the way, a process that satisfies locality in the sort of the prototypical one is percolation. Imagine some sort of discrete model here where I had open sites here, closed sites here, and I was doing the interface between open sites and closed sites. If I perturb my domain here and make these all closed, then that doesn't affect this path and the distribution of this path in the least bit until it hits there, in which case it does. So percolation is an example of something satisfying locality.
So is there any sort of hand-waving intuitive argument for what this phi double prime over phi prime is?
Yes. The implication of that answer is, let me say some more and let me come back to it. What's an intuition? Well, exactly an intuition. It's a potential. This is right, okay. It's the derivative of some kind of potential, or it's basically a derivative of a partition function. It's how partition function is changing. But I haven't written down, but I have to go through this level 3 to explain. So, okay. Well, we have this. Now, the title I said was martingales. I haven't gotten to a martingale yet. I haven't even defined martingale. And the simple, but unfortunately too imprecise definition of a martingale for our purpose is something that satisfies this, but where the dt term is zero, that only has the Brownian motion. There's a term local martingale, which is more which is a wider class than just martingale. So I'm going to use the term local martingale without being precise about the definition. I'm just going to use that for a process where the dt term equals zero. I should say dt term. I like processes where the dt term equals zero. There's a very natural, simple way to convert a process like that into one which is not, and that's by just taking an integral. So we take, let m sub t be e to the integral from 0 to t a lambda over 12 s ds USDS times KCT. What this is doing is basically putting in the right compensators to get rid of the sort of drift of the thing, the expectation, making expectation zero. And then, in fact, this equation is not exactly right. I'm sorry. It's dkt is equal to this times case of t. I'm sorry. It's case of t times all of that. So dm sub t is equal to b Now at this point, let me just point out we have this number lambda looking at this. So when we look at this term, sort of kind of want to explain what it is. The first thing, which is not obvious, but I'll tell you, the Schwarzian derivative is actually a negative quantity. So positive lambdas will give negative exponents. Lambdas bigger than zero, per kappa less than 8/3, or kappa bigger than 6. Lambdas, I mean, it's the same, the central charge is negative for those quantities. Lambda equals 0, and lambda is less than 0 in between. So KT is a Martin, if kappa is equal to 8/3, this is a martingale. I'll say a little more about local martingales versus martingales, but if everything is bounded, things are going to be a martingale. By the way, this number, this derivative, is always less than or equal to 1. So that's this quantity is less than or equal to 1. This quantity, whether it's big or small, depends on the sign of lambda, or whether it can be bigger. Okay.
When we talk about a local martingale in that equation that relates m to k, do we assume that k is a local martingale?
KT was not a local. KT satisfied.
General. Okay.
KT was general. This was sort of, in some sense, the local martingale most like KT. So if you're moving on KT, its expectation is not zero. We are putting exactly the right term to make it expectation zero to make it a martingale. But still, think of it as the local martingale most like KT. There's actually two candidates for that. One would be just a subtract, but this is really the one we want. Yeah.
Is there some natural point for break?
In fact, I was just about to say that this was a natural point. In fact, I was just about to break. So I think what I want to talk about a little bit is interpreting this and talk a little bit about Kirsanov transformation and things like that. But that's, it is now.
I'm trying to take a 5-minute break.
Okay. Before I do Kirsanov, I want to give a couple interpretations. I mean, there's a lot of calculations, but there are some interpretations of these quantities. Well, first thing, if I do just look at this quantity, I look at phi prime of 0 for a given d, then this is the probability that a Brownian motion, complex Brownian motion, started at 0, conditioned to stay in the upper half plane, stays in D. So here, if I take a Brownian motion, conditioned to stay in the upper half plane, then it eventually goes off to infinity. And I ask, what's the probability that it doesn't hit that? That's the derivative. That's one of the reasons. There you can actually see that that thing is less than 1. This quantity is perhaps a little more, that's a calculation, but there's actually a very nice interpretation of this in terms of Brownian loops. So let me, picture here. So that's H minus D. Here's the curve gamma up to time t. Well, yeah, it is. On the line, yeah. Okay. So well, let me pull A and lambda out here. And actually let me pull A lambda over 2 out. That's the way it's traditionally done. But look at the quantity integral from 0 to t, 1 sixth s vs 2. I'm sorry, I'll keep A over 2 in there. A over 2 just comes from the fact that I parameterize this with capacity A rather than 2. And what it is this quantity is the measure of Brownian loops, and I'll tell you what this measure in a second. That intersect both gamma 0 t and this blue part. Now I could tell you, I could give you the formal definition of this Brownian loop. I think I'd rather give you the discrete definition and just tell you it's the limit of a certain discrete measure. But suppose I put down a lattice in the upper half plane, say a square lattice, fine square lattice. And then I can look at just all possible random walk loops. So any loop beginning and ending at the same point. And make these loops unrooted, so they're loops, so you don't know what the beginning point is. And any loop of length n, you just give measure 1/4 to the n. That's 1/4, because I'm talking the square lattice. It would just be coordination numbers of your lattice. That's a measure on loops. And then if you scale the lattice down, this gives a limiting measure on Brownian loops, which is actually a conformally invariant measure. And if these two sets are separated, the set of loops that hit these two has finite measure. And so what this quantity here is e to the lambda times some measure of the number of loops. That was a negative quantity. I had to put a minus sign to make it a positive quantity. So minus a over 2 integral of that is the measure. Okay. Now I'm going to need to do, okay, I've got that equation there. Now I want to do a little stochastic calculus.
Sorry, what was m in the last equation, the exponential?
I'm just using that for measure.
I was avoiding measure of
the set. I'm just avoiding making up a notation. It would take another lecture to describe this in more detail. I think I'm not going to do that today.
Single loops?
but single loops, so not interacting. So yeah, so there's no, it's not like a these loop ensembles. It's nothing like that. It's just a measure. Okay, now I need a little simple introduction to Gersonov, or sometimes called Cameron-Martin theory, transformation. And this is really only a special case of it, but the case that we're interested in. So suppose I have a local martingale. But by that, it just means it satisfies an equation. It's supposed to satisfy the following. I'll call it B. And then times something. I could actually write down the solution to this, but I'm not going to write down the actual solution itself. I'm also going to assume that MT is non-negative. Well, let's assume it starts positive. One other assumption that I'm making implicitly, and it's true for everything here, is that this is a continuous local martingale. So P goes to M sub T is continuous. All our paths are continuous. They're Brownian motion with some drifts and things. Now, local martingales may or not be martingales. The martingale property is the following. Let me write it mathematically, but I'll just say, if I take the expectation of M sub T, so if S is less than T, and that's all the information up to time S. So I know everything up to time S. What's my best guess of M sub T given that? It's M sub S. Things that satisfy this may or may not be martingales because there are problems. Things, mass may run off to infinity. If everything is bounded, there's no problem, assuming continuity. But if things can run off to infinity, there may be a problem. But if M sub T is a martingale, well, that's a pretty big F, but that's if M sub T is a martingale, we can define a measure Q by the following formula. If E is an event, well, okay, I use probabilistic notation F sub T, but that means if it depends only on the path up to time T. Take some event that only depends on the path up to time T. Then Q of E is the integral over E MT over M0 dp. So basically what we're doing is we're weighting the paths by the martingale. When the martingale is big, we give bigger weight. When the martingale is small, we give smaller weight. There are some consistency issues in this definition that are taken care of by the martingale property of M sub T.
M sub T is not a martingale. This wouldn't even be a well-defined
definition because of different S's and T's.
I'm sorry.
This is just whatever probability, the probability on which the Brownian motion is defined. So if Brownian motion is defined on a probability space. So, yeah, I'm sorry. So this is defined on, so this is, it's basically the measure on B sub T. So B sub T is a measure on paths, and that's, so. So let me just look at, so we've got a measure on paths, we're going to give another measure on paths. Well, under, so here we have a collection. Think of this being a collection of paths, Brownian motions.
You say one of is absolutely
that's implied, right? Yes. Yeah. And it's mutually, if MT is not equal to zero, strictly positive, it's mutually absolutely continuous. But maybe, but if MTs can be equal to zero, then actually, okay, one has to be okay. One has to be a little subtle. Okay, restricted to F sub T, it's absolutely continuous. This actually extends to things to time infinity, and if you look at the paths up to time infinity, it can become singular. So you have to be a little careful here. For instance, you can write Brownian motion without a drift and Brownian motion with a drift of one using this kind. By appropriate choice of martingale. And so things that depend on the entire path, the limiting measure may be singular. It's sort of, but it's absolutely continuous when restricted to a finite interval. So I've got a measure on Brownian motions, measure on paths. Let me just do a Brownian motion. So there's a path, and right now we're thinking about this combination. P is a measure on paths so that these B sub T's satisfy the properties of being a standard Brownian motion. Now I can take these exact same paths, but I can use this measure on them rather than that measure on them. And if I use this measure, there's no reason why they should be a standard Brownian motion, and they're not. And in fact, with respect to Q, the paths satisfy and so I take another process, there's another process which is a Brownian motion using Q, and then these paths have, effectively I give a drift. I mean, to think about this, for instance, where the martingale is larger, paths which have a larger value of the martingale are given more weight, and therefore the paths tend to drift to where the martingale is larger.
I've given you a definition here which is inconsistent. I mean, this is a
perfectly legitimate. Okay,
and you could think of this as being
that
for a moment.
Q sub t is a measure on f sub t. Now, if s is less than t, f sub s is contained in f sub t. So now I have two measures.
You have this equation for s less than t or something.
Well, in order to verify this, you only need to verify this for every fixed finite interval. And that's what it means. So you can think of this as just for every finite. Yeah, right. Okay, if you wish to. Yeah. This is actually defined for all t. Okay, this is defined for all t, but if I'm only looking at the path up to a certain time, I only need to look at the events that occur up to that time. So, if you wish to do this, I don't object. I don't object to your doing it.
Maybe you should say, I think you didn't say that, in fact, you presented the martingale, this qt of e is independent of t.
Right. Well, that's what I was trying to say. Yeah. That's just, yeah. Right. That's the consistency condition. that the martingale, you need the martingale, it's got to be a martingale. So, yeah, okay. I was trying to say a different way, but you've got, this is independent of t, which means, so if s is less than t, and e is in ft, then e is also in fs. But if e is in fs, for those who know these things, the integral over e m sub s dp forget the m0, I mean, think of m0 as being 1 or being just being constant. Think of m0 as being a constant. I have to make a probability measure. So the idea is that if we one way to think about let me return to our situation here, our example. For example, we had m sub t that's just some nuisance term to make this thing into a martingale. Times this quantity. And it satisfies Okay, now I want to get back to the picture a little bit. So I have this quantity. That's less than or equal to 1. Let's not worry about b's bigger than kappa's bigger than 6 right now. But let's think of smaller. Like let's think kappa less or equal to 4 for the time being. In which case, this would be less than or equal to 1. This could be blowing up if lambda is negative, because this, that's a minus sign. But what happens is in this picture is that as long as the path isn't near here, that thing actually doesn't blow up. The only way that can blow up, actually, is if this path comes close to there. When I come very close to that, the measure of Brownian loops goes to infinity. Let's assume for a minute that it is a martingale. Assume it's a martingale. Let's not go for that. Okay.
This depends on the value of puff, right?
Yes. And I'll say that it actually turns.
This had this little intervals, right? Where it disposes of
another. Right. Okay. If lambda's. Okay. There are three. If b is positive and lambda is negative, this is a bounded martingale. Or lambda 0, in fact, is a bounded martingale. If b is positive and lambda is positive, it's not so obvious, but actually I'm telling you now that it turns out to be a martingale for kappa less than or equal to 4. I may not have time to explain why that's true today, but it is. There are problems for kappa bigger than 4. Let's just assume that it is. If you want to think of anything. Then if we weight the paths, by m sub t, and that if we weight the paths by m sub t is shorthand for this. changing the probability measure. The weighted paths satisfy, well, weighted paths U sub t satisfy dUt equals where W is a Brownian motion. This is exactly the same equation we had before. So in fact, definition 3, I'm going to make this definition imprecise, but definition 3 of Brownian motion in D, or say SLE in D is SLE weighted locally by this quantity. So in other words, what you're doing is you're trying to decide how to do SLE over here. Just do a normal SLE without looking at this. That brings you down here. Now for each of those paths you go down here, you compute the phi t prime of ut to the b. It's different for different paths. But then that's what you use to weight the things. That weighting may not be a probability measure. Sort of this is what you sort of use to make that local normalization a probability measure in some sense.
In this definition, are you first conditioning the SLE to not hit D?
No. Okay, good question. This is valid for T less than sigma. So what you can do to be precise is you can set stopping times. As long as you're staying your epsilon away from here, and you stop it so when you get epsilon within epsilon, then actually everything's a martingale, even for all values of kappa, and everything is legitimate. So you can do this Gersonov like that until you hit the set, then you have to worry about that. Okay, so this is... What you wanted to say, you do this thing locally. I mean, I could also say the exponential thing, but it takes longer to write that as well. You sort of, you know, locally you say, okay, I'm going to do a whole bunch of paths. They're my options for my moves. I do all those moves down there, and I say, okay, I'm going to use pt prime of b to weight them. But that's not a probability measure. You kind of have to normalize that to be a probability measure. And that's just doing the effect of normalizing it to make it a probability measure at each step. That's the way to think about it.
But hold on. When you normalize, you divide by a constant.
Your normalization depends on t. At different places, you have different normalizations. Locally a constant
means differentiable. Mm-hmm. Differentiable means locally a constant, and that's a differentiable
thing. Locally, the amount you need to normalize by is, yeah. Okay. Is that a point? Yeah, that is a hand going up. Okay. By a Brownian motion, not by an SLE. Yeah, so it's so by prime there's a probability of Brownian motion condition to stay above. Doesn't you can't see is that I get very close to this, pi prime goes to zero. And as this thing escapes, pi prime goes to one. which you can probably also see just by calculus. Okay. Now let me say something that's only true for kappa less than or equal to 4, the simply connected case. Because here I'm going to use the fact that it's a martingale, I can actually let mt go to infinity. Actually, it's more than just a martingale. For those who know the language, it's a uniformly integrable martingale. But for kappa less than or equal to 4, I actually have the following is true. And I'll explain what M infinity is, and we'll look at M infinity for a second. M sub 0 is actually constant. So M sub 0 is... That's the time 0. It's P minus 0 to the B. And M infinity is just what happens to this as T goes to infinity. Well, assuming that the path doesn't hit D, assuming that the path doesn't hit D, well, I can formally map this down, well, I won't draw it, from the perspective of this guy, D and D get smaller and smaller, effectively smaller and smaller. So if this thing's going to infinity, this guy goes to 1. And then we get the remainder of that. And that, well, that gets to the integral from 0 to infinity. That's hard to read as it is, but actually, there's the Brown, this is a Brownian loop soup. This is exactly expectation of e to the, well, I'll just use the stupid notation I had before. We take the measure, the Brownian loop measure of loops that hit the infinite path, and that's still a finite measure. So in fact, for kappa less than or equal to 4, we have definition 4 for SLE in the smaller domain. SLE in D is the measure whose Radon-Nikodym derivative with respect to SLE in H is this quantity. Well, we just... is that quantity, then if I want to make it normalized to 1, I have to do this. So basically, and note that this quantity, this Brownian loop is short, I mean, this quantity is only just a function of the path. You just give me a particular path, and you can compute this quantity. And then all you're doing is taking the expected value of that with respect to SLE. In fact, one doesn't really want to have this normalization. I've normalized this to make it a probability measure. In fact, it's probably better off not doing the normalization. So I would actually prefer to think of, to define SLE, so sort of a new definition, which is slightly different than Tromm's, is SLE in D is the measure of total mass whose radii-nicotine derivative is exact everything I wrote there except without the normalization. I know I'm a probabilist, but one doesn't always have to have probability measures. And in fact, one wants to. And in fact, what one should think about this is a partition function.
So in some sense,
PD prime of 0 to the B is a normalized partition function. And SLE in domains tries to move to increase the partition function.
So could you make this a little more explicit? So partition function is a sum over things.
Okay, let me give an example.
Wait.
I'm going to give an example. Let me give an example, which is only conjectural at this point. There's another one I can give, would be a little more complicated, which is actually a theorem, but I'll just give the conjectured one.
Okay. Let's do
self-avoiding walks. I want to talk about self-avoiding walks in a second anyway. The upper half plane is not the best possible domain to do partition functions on. So let me get out of there for a second. So suppose I have SLE. Let me define SLE first on bounded domains, bounded simply connected domains. So suppose I have Z and W. And let me assume that actually the boundary of D is smooth at Z and W. Let's take a nice boundary. Now, Schramm's definition of SLE in D is just the conformal image of SLE in the upper half plane by an appropriate conformal map. And basically, I want to do the same thing, except I also want to give you the total mass of the measure. So take an F from H to D, and we'll actually take precisely this one. F of 0 is Z. And I'm going to be a little imprecise here for a second, but I want to fix the derivative at infinity. And there's a way to fix the derivative that kind of means equivalent to derivative 1 at infinity. It's not exactly mean that here, but in some. Let me just put it here. I'm going to put that in quotes, but that's. I want to choose the derivative to get the right value of the derivative here, so I can focus on the derivative there. And then, I'm just going to give a notation.
And it's either
plus B or minus B. I just have to get the right direction. Depends which way I took F. If I took F from D to H, it would be, so it must be minus B in this way.
Okay, so now
I've extended this to all simply connected domains. So I have a mass on domains. So for every simply connected domain, in fact, let me write this, because I like this viewpoint of things. I have a measure on paths connecting points on the domain, and I can write this as the total mass times the probability measure. And I've been using sharps for probability measures just to. So this is a probability measure, and this is Schwalm's SLE. That's just the conformal image, and this is just some total mass. And the total mass moves like this. Now the conjecture is, and I'm not going to be precise about this conjecture, something like that, but suppose you took, say, number of self-avoiding walks from C to W in some lattice. You give them the appropriate weight, so it's a criticality. Then you have the sum over all walks, the measure at criticality. And then if properly normalized, the total mass should be this quantity. So it should actually correspond to this.
Just interpret again. This is the partition function, or the regularized partition function.
Well, regularized is maybe a better word.
Yeah. For the normal field.
Can you normalize?
With boundary conditions changing operators at W and Z of scaling dimension B.
I only normalized once. I don't care if renormalized.
Yeah. It's the partition function for a conformal field theory in this domain with boundary conditions changing operators or with the operators.
So. Anywhere near as much done as I thought, but I think I'll. Okay. So. Okay, so that's all the different ways of looking at SLE in different domains. I guess one comment about this, I mean, one of the key things, one of the natural generalizations of SLE is for non-simply connected domains. And Schwalm's definition is completely useless for non-simply connected domains. And if you're interested in non-simply connected domains, say, upper half plane with holes in it, if you're interested in SLE on that, then it's basically, it should be SLE weighted by the partition function. Computing the partition function can be a difficult thing. And different problems might actually give you different partition functions. But it's just computation of the partition function should tell you what the drift for the SLE should be. Just a general principle. Or the normalized, regularized, renormalized partition function.
You don't have to renormalize the partition function, you have to regularize it.
Regularize it. I would just write this as a limit of a bunch of measures with
the partition function without the boundary condition changing operators. Then you take the limit of the lattice spacing goes to zero, and you get something finite. That's what I mean by regularizing. Right? No. Then you also have to multiply by some power of the lattice spacing raised to the power b.
Yeah. That I do.
Yeah. That's renormalized. Thank you.
Right. But it's just normalized. I mean, just doing it once.
Okay. Oh, it's not renormalized. You should blame people a long time ago. Blame Gell-Mann, I think, or somebody.
Because I only have a few more minutes before people probably have to get off for lunch. Let me just give you a couple other examples of partition functions you probably may not have seen. So the example I gave there was for SLE in a smaller subdomain. And then we had this, our partition function depended on Z, the point here, and the domain V. And it was, well, in this case, it was dd prime of Z to the V power. That's really z in infinity. I don't have the implicit infinity there. Suppose we had, let's take 0 here. Let's take a point z in the upper half plane. And let me choose, let me call this w. I can call this z. Well, actually, that's all right. It's a real number, so let me call it x. Okay, x and w. Now, the partition function I'm going to choose is just the Poisson kernel in the upper half plane. So W is equal to R plus IS. It's S. I don't care whether I multiply by the 1 over pi or not. It doesn't make any difference.
What is R?
I've just written W as R plus IS. Actually, I guess that's really terrible notation. R is always the radius, but okay, I'll worry about that. Okay. Suppose we do SLE kappa in H weighted by this function. So I should be precise, we're at any particular time, the function is the x is u sub t, and this gets moved whatever it gets moved to. So if I've done this for a little bit, then this point is mapped to u sub t, and this point is mapped someplace to gt of w. But actually, our b comes into play too here. So when I weight it by something, that's shorthand for looking at that process that may or may not be a local martingale. In this case, it's not a local martingale. You have to do the e to the minus whatever to make it into a martingale, and then weight it by that. And then maybe if this blows up, you might have to worry about stopping it as well, doing stopping it. And in fact, in this case, this quantity does blow up if this point gets very close to here. And in fact, this thing very much favors paths that want to get close to W. In fact, what happens is it gets to W in finite time, finite capacity time. And in fact, this process is well known to people. This is radial SLE. For those, and this is actually radial SLE. Now, I hope people have seen radial SLE kappa is normally defined by curves from the unit circle to the origin, but it can be defined from any boundary point to any interior point by conformal invariance, and this is another way of getting it. It's a very different parameterization than you would get if you map this to the unit disk. In the unit disk, it takes infinite time to get from circle. Here, it takes finite time under this particular parameterization. Okay, I mean, at this point I'm going to have to take a poll or something. The next thing on my list of things to discuss was how to get the dimension of at least the calculation to get the dimension of an SLE path. That would take 10, 20 minutes. I can either stop now or I can go another 10, 20 minutes. So Silence means stop. I know this. So maybe, yeah, I've gone for almost 2 hours now, and I think maybe, I'm happy to discuss it the other time. Maybe I should stop for today. Any further questions?
You mentioned you can begin to discuss SLE in domains that are holes. What are the questions you would like to answer? How often it winds around a hole?
I don't think there's a unique question to that. I mean, you might be interested in those questions, but you won't be interested. I mean, why are we interested in SLE? Because SLE is a limit of lots of different models. If you're interested in any of those models in a non-simply connected domain, then you'll be interested in SLE in a non-simply connected domain. The kind of questions you might ask depend on the particular model. The kind of phenomenon you get depend not just on the bottom model, but now you have more subtle boundary conditions and everything else that you can, I mean.
Yes, that's one question. If you're thinking of a scale limits, can you imagine getting different results depending on how you choose the boundary conditions? So does it mean that you cannot have a unique definition of SLE?
There is not a unique, yeah, there are conditions that you should have. I mean, SLE in a simply connected domain, in non-simply connected domain should be, okay, let's think I can talk about for 2 minutes. Look at this property. Now, suppose we want to extend this to non-simply connected domains D. Well, there's a certain property that we would want to satisfy. We'd want to satisfy this property and conformal invariance of the probability measure. That far from uniquely defines the process. And there are many examples. One I wrote a paper on, which actually turned out to be a process that Xiao also looked at, was the would be the natural scaling limit for the Laplacian random walk. The natural scaling limit for the Laplacian random walk, there's no problem defining it in non-simply connected domains. It's just because the way the definition goes, it's fine. It doesn't mean we understand it very well, but the definition works fine. But if I compare that to, say, the natural limit of self-avoiding walks, I forgot to talk about self-avoiding walks. Important fact, self-avoiding walks, maybe I'll take in 1 minute. I did 4 minutes before with this P prime, when lambda equals zero and cap equals 8/3, then we get that we don't need that funny loop thing, we just get this thing called the restriction property. So the restriction property has to do with lambda equals zero there. Okay. There's a natural way to define self-avoiding walks in non-simply connected domains. And whether or not I've actually written down the proof or not are things, but it's almost certain, if not completely certain, that these two definitions are not the same. So there's two examples of two natural problems that would give you two different answers in non-simply connected domains. That's not even dealing with a boundary condition.
Okay.